Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know how y'all spell it, but I spells it like B-L-A-C-K-M-A-N. That's what I'm talking about. It's that time again, everybody. Wednesday. We happen to be live on a Wednesday, 8 p.m., and we got a lot to chop up. We got work to do, y'all. We got a lot of work to do. Past week, what's the title? The title I put on this week's episode is, of course, 100,000 coronavirus deaths, of which my family has been touched and is a part of that total. Joe Biden, Central Park, Cindy, and the Minneapolis police make up the white supremacy trifecta of the week. And your man, Donald Trump, still trying to infect people with the virus as he walks around with no mask, because, you know, they say wearing a mask is more about protecting the people you're around than yourself. So it really shows you how much concern he has just in his very carriage, in his very being. And, of course, our brother was murdered in Minneapolis by the murdering police officers who have been fired. I got one question. So they're fired, right? That means they're not in the force no more, right? So there's probably a difference when you bust up somebody who's not a police officer as opposed to when they are a police officer. That's just my personal question. You know, because sometimes, just every once in a while, you got to punch a bully right between the eyes and make sure he doesn't do that to nobody else. Yeah, a lot of things going on. Here's my notion here before we jump into the fellas. My notion is, I said the white supremacy trifecta. Let me explain that line of thinking, my theory along there. Joe Biden, right? He's part of a white supremacist system, grew up in it. He's a product of America, white man, product of America. He's going to be a product of a white supremacist system. So what happens oftentimes, even our most well-meaning friends and white individuals, friends and associates alike, and people that are getting to know us better, every once in a while, some people get carried away. Some people get too comfortable. Some people get awkwardly too comfortable, and they say some old stupid wild-ass stuff. Joe Biden being one of those type of individuals, but they don't know any better, because why? They are a product of white supremacy. Ain't nobody told them, you can't say that. Ain't nobody even told them to consider that might be wrong, their way of thinking might be wrong. And so when people want to point out to me and say, yeah, what about his crime bill votes and all these other votes, he was doing what other people who are products of a white supremacist system did, him and other well-meaning Democrats. He wasn't the only one who voted for them things. So that's what I mean about him being so caught up, brought up a product of the white supremacist system. That's how he was that comfortable. It's like for the younger kids, it's like your friend, you're listening to a rap song with your friend, and he says the N-word, your white friend, because he got too comfortable with you. Because you made them feel, you know, you guys are comfortable with each other. So he got a little bit too comfortable, got caught up, and said the N-word. That's who that is. The difference is, when you're pointing out to them, what do they do? What's their response? Are they contrite? Do they try to make it up? So that's what I mean about white supremacy as far as it relates to Joe Biden. Then when you get to my man, the Central Park Cindy, well, it's obvious, isn't it? one of the very vigilant people who want to keep up the practice of calling the police on black people doing various normal activities, moving in, going to their apartment, selling water, barbecuing, taking pictures of their kid, very normal activities black people doing. And when the brother, and she took it all away because she knew that her words potentially would bring the cops quicker and potentially could put that man in a dangerous situation. And what do we see just 2 days later, how deep it could have gotten? I'm going to bring my brother Byron in. So that's what I meant, the thread, the white supremacy trifecta there, that how it affects us so deeply. It really was a quadfecta, but, you know, with Trump, he's just a constant in terms of the white supremacist aspect. So Brother Byron, the legendary historian, and that was the theory I put forth, Byron, there with the trifecta.
I love it. Yeah, and listen, my brother up there in the city, you know, I'm down here in the cesspool, and you know I like Wayne Gilman's notion, we needed a death clock on the president. And you're right.
Mm-hmm.
We're up over 101,305, okay, dead, infected, over 17 million, no, over 1,730,136 as of today and counting. That's in the nation. In Washington,
mm-hmm.
D.C., we got 445 people dead, 8,406 people infected. And you know the scary part? We are the nation's most visited city for tourism. And thank God we got a mayor who's defying the president, defying all the GOP, and saying we're not ready to open. Because she knows the minute we open, we're going to be hit from everywhere in this country. People are going to still be traveling. They're going to come to D.C. as another city that's the second most visited city, New York City. 20,795 people dead, 104,111 people infected. I don't know about you, Eric. That's unacceptable. This is May 27th, and you know, this all had happened within, 6 weeks, 8 weeks at the most. And we're not even in the second peak of this again, because it's getting ready to happen. And then you throw in the other pandemic, which is, I don't know which is worse, the COVID-19, or as Don Lemon said, racism 20. Racism 20. That's a good one, Eric.
That's a tough thing. Let's bring in our brother, the legendary newsman, because I know he's got a certain perspective, Brother Wayne Gilman. Wayne, how you doing this evening?
I had difficulty getting in. I don't know. Blog Talk is probably, getting intolerant of my behavior on the air here. But, it's just despicable to think that in the space of 3 months, so many people have gone. And I've known 7. I'm hoping that it stops at that. It's just very, very telling about the lack of leadership in this country, the fact that we have somebody who's actually running the country with sophomoric, childlike behavior that seems to feel that he cannot be criticized, challenged, anything, you know, and he fosters an environment where there's polarization, divisiveness. He's quietly, in many subtle ways, have allowed, you know, black men to be shot at, you know, by police, and you know, there's no response for that. It's like become acceptable behavior. The economy he wants to take credit for prior to this pandemic, and all of it was built on the foundation of Barack Obama. There are so many things that we could point to, and I don't want to sound repetitious because I said the same thing last week, that, you know, we could hold this man accountable for that would, in my opinion, or anybody out there who's of a progressive mind and thinking logically, would see no reason for him to have a second term. Yet, you go into different ports of call when the news media panned certain cities and certain environments. And you know, everybody was restless this past weekend. Even though the weather was bad on the East Coast, people wanted to get out. But I saw some film footage. I'm certain many of you all witnessed it too. I think it was in the Ozark Mountains or somewhere in Missouri where no one was wearing a mask. They were in some sort of Coney Island, like some amusement park, and people were bathing, and you know, young people were just going about their lives, blithely unaware of the consequences of what could happen, because there is a perception that this was an East Coast ghetto problem, and that they are totally immune to contracting this disease. And you know, it just sickens me. I just saw a neighbor down the street battling for his life. They just brought him home here in an ambulance, and he's hoping he doesn't have to go back. It's sad, really sad.
Yeah, I mean, that is how they look at it. They look at it as a black and brown disease. You know, I mean, the president all this weekend wasn't wearing his mask in public. And, you know, the big thing about that, which really gives you an insight, always the little things, you know, that gives us the insight to who people really are, is that they say the masks are to protect other people, not yourself so much, so you won't affect other people. And here this guy is knowing that, not only not wearing the mask, but also making fun of Joe Biden for wearing one, try to insult, berate the reporter to taking it off. And so there's, and then has the nerve to visit various facilities, one in where they're actually making the masks and breathing on people and just talking. So it shows you how there's no concern for this guy. And so the people that follow him do the same course. And it's also really a real peek into a really white supremacy and how it's these men, these people, don't want someone telling them what to do. Kind of like if you look, think about, and they equate it with Obama, the Democrats, black people, you know, them losing grip on the country and it becoming more diverse. And so, therefore, their status as white in a white supremacist nation is slipping away, right? So that's where the whole just refusing to be agreeable about anything at all, as long when it's coming from that space, everything is off the table for them. And so, I mean, that's what he's symbolizing. He's not wearing, when he says he's not wearing a mask because he doesn't want to give the press an opportunity, talk about liberate the states when the governors are trying to, you know, keep the people safe. It's everything is opposite, in conflict, agree with nothing. They want to have someone to fight against and to fight with. And that's what they do, even when, you know, when, like I said, going back to the Obamas, when they were in office and Michelle was doing something as simple as trying to get people to eat right. And you had people like Sarah Palin and other people on the side. I'm going to have a big gulp and do that, and made that a political issue because they need to have something to hate. That's what they thrive on. At least that's what they feed their followers, their base, that to thrive on. And those people, that segment of the white population that really is racist and white supremacist and believes in that, because clearly there is a certain population of that population that wants us dead, wants to kill us off. What else can we assume? What else, what conclusion can be drawn if every time this continues to happen, all during our lives, our fathers' lives, our grandfathers' lives, our great-grandfathers' lives, what other conclusion can there be other than the fact that there are certain individuals within this population of people that are murderous, bloodthirsty, and just want to kill off other people and believe that they must reign supreme over all other beings? And so once we accept that and know that, then, you know, you plan your day accordingly. How you going to deal with these people? Whether we can really depend on any police force having real authority if it's not an integrated police force, because clearly this happens too many times. So do we really need to trust an all-white police force? We really need to question the positions of authority that we maintain in a society other than just the front line, so we're the first ones dying. And this is the issue with black power and black leadership rising amongst the ranks of all these areas of authority in our country. You were going to say, Wayne.
No, I happen to agree, and I also not every department that is somewhat integrated, and I'll cite the New York City Police Department where there are people of color, you know, on the force, and not everybody upholds what you would think would be the politically accepted point of view. There's some that are there, and they, you know, and I'm not, and I shouldn't just
but,
use
but
the time
I know exactly what
to
you mean, and that's been the
them.
Age old that's been the age old thing. But is that more a convenience or a development out of a survival tactic within that environment, or were these individuals naturally, let's call them naturally Uncle Toms, for lack of a better term? I think that it might be some who might be, there might be a percentage who are Uncle Toms or whatever, but I also think there might be a percentage of some being in an environment where they have to watch their back, and so what kind of trade-offs do they decide to make? I don't necessarily think that everybody, although you see some of the black cops engaging in you know, some of the same behavior that we see some of these racist ones do. And, you know, I mean, when we're all thinking and reasonable people know when you get down to it, it is not a racial thing. It's an, you know, an evil versus good thing. I mean, basically to me, the assholes versus the non-assholes, you know. And in asshole category, you have the racists and the prejudiced.
Well,
people,
I think
people
just the way things
everybody.
Are set up, not to cut you off, Eric, but I mean, there have been studies that have been done. I'm reminded not long ago, fellow journalist Soledad O'Brien did a documentary and fixed on the New York City Police Department about the quota system and how they're being police officers of color and Latino and black together, even Asians, were required to bring in a certain amount or force if they're getting into the system to work in certain areas just to earn their stripes to come up the ranks, you know. And some were complaining about it, and some felt that
so they were forced to do what? What take certain assignments have a certain behavior? What do you mean?
Beg your pardon?
Do you say in assignments or have certain behavior? What exactly?
A combination of assignments, you know, given out by their commanders, and to act in a way that would require behavioral modification. If
just
it kind was of
towing the blue line, in other words, what you're saying.
In other words, it was just blatant racism. They wanted them, you know, there were there were certain white leader police commanders in this system, and this thing was well televised almost a year ago, and I'm just trying to jog my memory back, but basically the gist of what was going on is that there were people in this department who found, you know, what they were forced to do just to satiate, you know, the need of a commander to say that they're bringing in X amount of people, you know, to say that they're precinct is
in
defective.
In terms of quotas, you're talking about
in terms of quotas,
like that.
But they
I
were
see.
Getting people, officers of color, you know, to largely carry out this deed. And very often, it's like, you know, the stop and frisk thing, that was all predicated on a quota. And there are some that felt that maybe to a certain extent it was needed at the time, but it just got out of control. I know Eric Adams, who's the borough president of Brooklyn, a former police officer. I knew him as a cop. You know, he often says it's not to say that stop and frisk wasn't effective. It was just out of control. And I guess it depends on who you had running the department that ordered these things to happen, and that was it. But I, you know, once we get off the air, I'm going to see if I could find a clip, YouTube, or go into Google, and there's got. I know Soledad O'Brien did this piece, and it's not just her alone. There've been other studies done, you know. And
right.
When
so
I look
basically,
at what
they're
happened,
having they're getting they're dealing with racism on the job on top of having the worst assignments. And then some of the racist policy, they were the ones that were having to enforce or carry out some of the racist policies of the
right
thing. And,
then
of course,
the pressure
of being on the force, you got, obviously you got to toe the blue line as well then, right?
Yeah, you know, so it's, right. It ain't pretty, you know. I mean,
right,
but at the
right,
same
right.
Time,
well, that's what I'm saying.
You
those,
know,
right, that's what I'm saying. I believe that people of the community that are on the force, if they were doing that those things, it was because of the pressure. That's exactly what I was saying. I'm saying that the individuals that we have on the force that are members of the community aren't choosing to be, for the most part, you know, lack of a better term, again, once again, Uncle Tom's. You know, I think that they succumb to the pressures that of the job, that the job is demanding them. And that's inherent in white supremacy too, right? In the racism that they're experiencing, even on the job where it's a position of authority. You know, I was talking to my father earlier today, and he made a very good point and said, you know, oftentimes that police officers are the first example of government and authority that the average citizen has come in contact with, has an example of dealing with. And if you think about it, that's quite true. The police officer is an extension of the government, you know, there to law and order to keep the peace. And as that representative, that's usually the first individual that the average person might come in contact with as an authority figure that is representative of our society's governmental structure. And it's just, when you think about it in those terms, that and how that structure reacts to African Americans, it's very clear that this is still a society that practices that racism and that supremacy and really does not want us to progress, because obviously there's members of that society that are trying to keep it from happening. And I talk about, you know, the moves that they're making, the programs that they push. I mean, this guy is pushing people to go back to work and to go to churches and to go to beaches, and he's making fun of people wearing masks, even though it was part of his CDC that came up with the guidelines. It's like this dude is crazy, like he's a crazy king. And he's like, sit up, stand down, you know, stand up, sit down, put the mask on, take them off, do this, do this. It's like, what's wrong with this dude, man? And he says one thing one week, and he says the next thing the next. He gets on people for doing it. He's going off on this person. Remember, mine, there's 100,000 people dead. You know, I could have done more. It's everybody's fault. I mean, it's really, and people, like I think you said it before, Wayne, people are questioning this guy's mental capacity because, you know, he's all over the place and all over the place doing damage.
It's amazing. It is amazing. And I'm not saying that we all have our moments, you know. I know some people in my family think I act like that, but the bottom line is, this guy is off the charts. I mean, and the world is seeing how, this, you know, how insensitive. It's all about him. You know, and I don't know why is it that members of the Republican Party, and there are some who've come out. I mean, I'm surprised even Liz Cheney is becoming more vocal now, and we have Mitt Romney, you know. But it's the McConnells, it's the Grahams, it's the Pauls, you know. Those folk, they will go down with the sinking ship regardless of what goes on, and to me, they need to be called out, and I hope all of them are vulnerable come around election time this go around. So I'm hoping that there's going to be a significant change. And, you know, I really hope so, because, I mean, I just can't see this continuing. They are killing the American system. Whatever democracy that was set up here, they are turning the tables to an autocratic society a government that will continue, and God forbid he gets another 4 years to make changes to where they're going. You know, it's sad.
Well, I mean, you know, the whole
sad's not even a word.
The other thing I wanted to turn our attention to was, you know, Joe Biden. We're talking about people ain't black if they don't vote for him. You know, people, and I talked about that earlier. You know, he's one of your white friends that gets too comfortable and awkwardly says some stuff, you know. I know he's the crime bill and all that stuff, but I said he was doing what they were doing, thinking that they were doing the right thing, and all they were doing was perpetuating their system. So, to me, once you bring that up to somebody, I mean, and I agree with that, but once you bring it, here's the thing. If you say to Joe what you said was racist, what you did was in it, and he turns around and says, you know what, I'm sorry, that was messed up, I shouldn't have said I got carried away. at least you're getting someone who is contrite and trying to be understanding of where they're coming from and how they're reaching you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know what you would get from the other side, from the other guy, if when he insults people. You get crickets. Yeah. You get donuts.
Yeah.
And for
but,
us to try to find a way, let me just finish real quick, Wayne. For us to try to find a way, because this is the point I want to get to, that some of these young cats are trying to find a way to hate or not to vote for Joe Biden and to somehow become brilliant kind of political scientists now is really a travesty because it's not the right time. I understand what everybody's saying. You know, it's messed up and Joe Biden, and great, you guys are becoming really aware, but the timing is just way off because what's the choice? The alternative, you know? That's what I just wanted to make that point and have you guys kind of address that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I know, Byron, you want to chime in here, but I agree with you, Eric. I mean, the deal is, I don't know Shalima that well. When I was leaving, he was on his way in. And I don't know who's responsible for, you know, use of the Breakfast Club because that was something that your mother and I started way back in the day. But the bottom line is we cannot afford to get lost in the weeds at this point. We cannot afford to get into this whole philosophical discussion as to who's black enough and, to me it's about getting this man out. You know, we cannot afford to have any distractions. We can, you know, we know that Joe Biden is capable of making many gaffes, you know. That's not even a point. The bottom line is that he's the nominee. There's no one else who's going to be in the picture there other than for him to choose a running mate. Hopefully, and I'm not saying that even if he goes in another direction and decides to choose someone of his own complexion, we got to get this guy out. We just cannot afford to have this continue. So when you get caught up in this lost in the source philosophical discussion about, yeah, we know that the black community is not a monolith. We know that we are due something and that Biden owes. I think Biden is well aware of the fact that had it not been for the black community coming out in great numbers during the series of primaries across the country, his ass wouldn't be there, you know? So the bottom line is that there's got to be change. I'm sorry, Byron. You know,
it's okay.
I went a little too far.
No, you didn't. You went just where you had to go. You know, every comment made, Wayne and Eric, very valid to the point. And for Joe Biden's gaffe, you know what? Joe, like most white men especially, women don't do it as often. But most white men get comfortable being around black folks because then they want to talk like us. They want to act more like us. So yeah, I'm not blown out of the park by what he said because ultimately in the street, he's right. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
How many percentage of black men or women that get any current office holders looking to bring in? I mean, come on now. The 5 or 6 people that
bottom
you know
line, he's right. You ain't really black. You ain't thinking right.
Come
and
on.
You ain't thinking like a black person. You ain't going to vote for me. And this is too. Here you go,
exactly.
Byron, too. And here's the thing people really need to notice. When Joe starts popping off like that, that means he's in fighting form. Because that's who Joe is. And he pops off, and like I said, you know, he starts shooting, and you know, the same thing he said about Barack being nice, clean, and articulate. But when you check him on it, this is the thing. He says, oh, I'm sorry, my bad. I'll try to be understanding. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about, try to get people to understand. He's not just saying, oh, well, that's your problem. You know, so,
you know,
that's how you tell Joe. I'm sorry?
The real test will come when the debates, whether it's televised in person or we're still in the lockdown situation and socially, politically being corrected 6 feet apart. But that first moment where Biden turns to Trump and punks him in front of a camera. And you know what? It'll take one look. All he has to do is just raise his finger and point at him and not say a word.
I just know that anything's liable to be said at that moment between those two guys. I'm going to bring in a caller in.
I'm looking
this
for
is,
it. That's right.
My dad, former Assemblyman William Payne, he wants to join the conversation a little bit. What are your thoughts there on Joe Biden's statement, Dad? I know you got something to say. And people kind of overreacting to the ain't black thing and that being kind of a distraction. Hello.
Yeah, good evening,
Payne.
Gentlemen.
Good evening, Bill. How you doing?
Good. Yeah, it's an interesting conversation you guys have going on there. I was disturbed primarily about the another one of our brothers being killed by a police officer.
Yeah.
I can't breathe again, and it's absolutely incredible that that kind of thing can go on again or still. But it's my hope that we will be able to one day we'll be able to get to the point where we're able to have some kind of decency on the law enforcement edge. I know in the city of Newark, you know, where I'm born and raised, there's a police review board and which has some teeth in it now, and you know, through the years there's been efforts to get a board that would review the behavior of some of these people, and I think that Newark is one of the towns that is making some strides there. But my God, it's just incredible that this is still happening in this day and age. I've been around a little bit longer than all you guys, and I can remember when things were worse than they are today. And I'm glad that people are standing up. I note that in Minneapolis that there were people that were actually demonstrating against the behavior of those guys. And I know we have to be vigilant. That's all. We have to make sure. One of the things that we have to do. I was talking with some people the other day, and they were saying to me that voting is not. That doesn't mean anything. And we've been voting for 50 years. This guy said, I don't know where he's been. It's been a little bit longer than that, but been voting for 50 years and nothing has changed. And so he's saying it makes no sense. Why should I vote? And that's exactly what the other people want. Don't vote. They don't vote. You know, and it's a stupid kind of approach, because if the fact you don't vote, you're not going to be able to do anything. And if the person you elect doesn't do the job, then you vote them out the next time. But if you don't participate at all, you're giving it all away. And it's stupid for people to say, well, I ain't going to vote, man, because they're not going to listen to me. You better believe it. If you're not a registered voter, you're not voting, you can rest assured nobody's going to be listening to you. But I got into a heated argument with somebody talking about it's a waste of time. And that's precisely the message that, the enemy wants you to have. You know? But anyway, that's my story as far as
Right, Dad. That's a very interesting point. When people say that often, doesn't make it sense to vote. To me, it's very short-sighted. You're thinking in the moment, you're impulsive, because what's the practicality of that? Think that through. People don't often think through how this story is going to play out. So I don't vote, so I'm just going to be doing the same thing. So how else do I think change is going to come? Revolution? Well, what's that going to take? Am I willing to, you know? So all of these steps that people, when they want to be revolutionary in the moment and they don't realize what it takes to build up a race, that's where people need to understand, and it's bizarre, and maybe there's a room for maybe we could develop some sort of hologram at the Black Museum, the Smithsonian African American Museum, where modern-day people, could take a walk through 1947 Alabama, when people didn't have the right to vote, or when them people with the Freedom Riders were catching hell, and maybe they can experience what it was like when they didn't have the right to vote. So when they come back, like Back to the Future, Black to the Future, they can realize, I better take my ass over there and vote, you know, because stuff has changed. It's so short-sighted when people say, well, nothing's changed. I don't know. You're not still riding on the back of the bus, are you? You're not still treated like second-class citizens, are you? So clearly the vote and activism and within the system has worked to a certain degree. Now, if you're saying it hasn't worked fast enough for you, then maybe you might want to put your shoulder down and put and get behind the plow too, because we know what happens.
Yeah,
usually the people that want to talk and criticize the most are the ones that are least willing to really get out there and do what it takes. You know, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
We have
looking
for a leader.
What's the alternative? If you don't vote, what's your alternative?
Exactly.
People that are there are the ones that make the laws. And if, in fact, you say, I ain't going to vote because those people, they're not going to do anything for me. And they, you know, you really will have nobody doing anything for you if you don't bother voting. And that's something that people have fallen, you know, fallen for. You know, I'm not going to vote because they ain't going to do nothing. And that's, you know, you go to suburbia and whatnot. I asked these guys yesterday, I said, you know what the most important day in suburbia is in the family? You get together and the night before election, you know, they talk to their kids, you talk to the folks, and you're ready to vote now. And, you know, they talk about how important it is to vote. Make sure you vote tomorrow. And you go into some other neighborhoods, like maybe some inner city places, whatever, where the conversation is, you know, tomorrow's election day. I ain't going to vote, man. I ain't just wasting time. And the message has gotten through to the ones out there in those other communities, but if the opposite message has gotten to us. And as long as we follow that, we are going to be we're going to end up where we are now. Not, you know, I ain't going to vote because they're not going to do anything. You know, it's self-fulfilling prophecy.
And I agree with both of you there. I mean, in all honesty, that is the one thing that raises my blood pressure when I hear people talk. I think of one person in particular back in 2016 who felt, well, you know, Barack couldn't get anything done because of the whites that were blocking him in the Republican Senate, blah, blah,
right.
blah, this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so maybe
yeah.
let's give a white man a chance. Let's give Trump a chance.
Yeah.
And maybe,
yeah.
you know, that you know, it's the ignorance.
Yeah.
That still prevails.
Well, the first part of
community.
It was true. The first part of it was true.
Yeah.
They were blocking him, but the conclusion is totally wacky. You know.
Yeah. This is what we're paying for now. You know, I saw him. I saw the same guy about a week ago, just getting out of the hospital and talking about how he picked up the virus. And I'm just saying, hey, listen, you know. I hope you can, because not that I joke about it, I'm very serious about it, but I remind him of what he told me 4 years ago, you know, because
right,
I want
right,
him to know
right.
that the reason why he was in a hospital had a lot to do with what decisions you made back then, had enough of them come out, you know, and that's the problem.
Right.
We have a lot of work in our community to do. We really do, because there's still many of us who think that way.
Yeah,
the hardest impact that's getting ready to hit all of us because as you know, the unemployment numbers are going to be horrendous. We're close to 45 million people unemployed, and this is either going to stay at this level, but even at the best of all intentions, I don't see it coming below 30 million by election time. So that impact of summer, no jobs, we still have PKK police, we still have a boiling situation in new God knows where, what the next killing of an innocent, a person without weapons, killed in the line of whatever fire, another black person dead, along with a high incidence of the COVID-19 impacting on African-American communities specifically. I don't know about you gentlemen, but all I see ahead is a pot that's about to explode. And this administration, in the midst of the pandemic, racism, and now we're about to hit hurricane season, our crops are already failing, it's time to remove this person from office like yesterday.
No question about it. No question about it. And, and Joe Biden, I laughed when he said to this, you know, that if you don't know the difference between Trump and Biden, then something must be wrong with you, you know. And he was right. You ain't black.
He
was
right.
I laughed at it. I mean, Biden is not the smoothest, most loquacious guy out there. He speaks what comes to him first of all. And I take Biden any time over to the other bunch of people that are talking about running for office, and I think that Joe Biden, with the right running mate, maybe Susan Rice, whom I'm pushing for that vice president, would probably be that. I think that would be the best best team there. And it's my hope that he'll go through the list there and he'll, pick her, Susan Rice's top fight, and then she'll be the next president. There's other folks out there that suddenly are showing a great deal of interest in running for president, but as a vice president, but I question some of them, and I really believe that a person with the qualifications of that woman Susan Rice, I think we all know her. She would make, I think, an excellent vice president candidate. You know, and I'm hoping that her name will be thrown out there. I think at once it was, but between them, and that's the best thing. I mean, he's right.
Very qualified.
If you have a debate going between Trump and Biden, then you have a problem. You have a serious problem if you're black. You know.
Yeah.
Well, I just hope we don't get lost in the weeds, man, because Charlamagne did not do us a favor by bringing this up as an issue, and I'm concerned about the millennials who follow that stuff and don't see what's at stake, you know? That's the problem.
It's really about the educational level, the extent, I mean, you know, it became fashionable when Obama got elected for all of the young people to really get involved in politics across the board, I'm talking about. There's always been a certain population of young people that have been interested in the issues and of course that. But across the board, it became fashionable to be paying attention to politics once we had the first African-American president. So more young people were going out to do that, and they just did the first level of the education of politics, meaning they only paid attention to the presidency because that was the big show about president. They forgot that the chess game is coming back 2 years later and voting in the midterm, because we have to continue our job what we started, because when you really understand politics in the system in which we live, and you're a responsible citizen, that you should be, you should know that it's just as important to vote for the midterms elected for your congressman, your senator, and who's doing what. You know, and that's what we have to do. We really have to, you know, stop half-educating these people and try to fully educate them to what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then going in, same with hand-in-hand, in my perspective, with the political push of how we need to be more astute, needs to be a structural, financial, and educational end of that, about how everybody can see, if we make these moves together, this is how we're moving the issue of black people forward. Through finances and understanding your money and where it's going, and where you can have that spend, use your economic power and turn that into political power as well, and how you can bring the two together to move forward. We haven't spent the time in educating our people in terms of what finances do and how the banks redline our certain neighborhoods and places like that. So we need to spend as much time educating these people about it. And also, too, you know, radio show hosts and record executives and all that, they're in a certain millionaire category. You know, what's interesting to me is that these guys are telling everybody, reveling, you know, they're rousing everybody up and having second thoughts about voting. But the people that are listening to them, just like on the Republican side, are the rank-and-file people that are on the front lines, that are ones that have to catch the hell, that have to be exposed. You know, Charlamagne could broadcast from his house. He could afford to, you know, ride it out. You know, he's making a certain amount of money. He's not in the social economic a level that a lot of his listeners are in, who are going to be the ones that will be first exposed to COVID-19 should the guy in the White House get reelected and decide to do absolutely nothing the next time, because then it's going to be us, our people on the front line, that are exposed again. So, you know, it's kind of a mislead. It's kind of like my issue with Bernie. You're misleading people a little bit about the true realities of it. When you talk about all of us together liberating, it's, yes, that's easy for you to say, Bernie, but you're a white man, so naturally by proxy you just get the pass. The black people are following you, ain't going to get that pass. So what happens again? We get another George Floyd, not 2-3 weeks, a month later than after the young brother. It keeps happening.
Please.
So we need to understand the game a little bit and get –
And
you
it's
know,
going to happen again. And what's happening, Eric, right now is that, notice, last night there was rioting in Minneapolis. How much of a news coverage did that get?
Right. Oh,
okay.
Well,
because,
I mean,
because
I was
point,
on it. I mean, I think a lot of people – Minnesota is no longer Minnesota Nice anymore now, you know. They have been affected by the same things that affected urban centers are around the country for years, and
yeah.
that particular neighborhood, I have a good friend of mine, a friend of the show, as a matter of fact, he listens in from time to time, and he was telling me that that neighborhood, although they consider it black, it's very well mixed, you know,
uh-huh.
and that there were other people who were, I mean, from outside the black community that were protesting as well, because that
yeah.
particular
yes.
department at that particular precinct is racist. They have a known history of being well above board when it comes to dealing with people of color. And I'm glad the Attorney General stepped in. I'm glad the mayor stepped up. I hate the fact that it just seems to be a perfunctory reaction on most police unions to say, oh, well, you know, we really got to examine this. What more is there to examine?
Yeah.
What more?
Yeah.
I mean, how much more do you have to see that this man was killed in front of everybody, that it had been memorialized? It's like the girl in Central Park. If the brother there who birdwatched, you know, didn't have a camera with him, they probably would have locked him up.
Yeah.
I'm tired of this
yeah.
garbage. I'm done.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, one of the things I like to say to you, I mentioned that too, that be careful walking in the park, you know, bird watching, you might get, even that becomes dangerous now too. One of the things that that concerns me too, though, is that we have folks that don't really participate very much in getting out, getting the vote out, getting you know, our candidates elected, but to have so much to say about they don't do nothing once they get there. You know, there were a lot of black folks. Obama, he ain't done nothing. He do nothing. He's told you about, you know, we get somebody there, and you, I'm sure you know some of them too. Well, what did he do? What did he do? The fact is that the guy was by himself, just about down there, and you had people just, well, shoot, man, he ain't nothing. And I'm wondering why. What satisfaction do we get out of that? And I'm sure you've probably heard people like that too. Oh yeah, Obama's down there. What did he do for black folks? And the fact of the matter is that black folks, if we came out and if the wrong guy is there, we get out of them the next time. We get rid of them. But if, in fact, we can make a lot of noise about, oh, they ain't doing this and they ain't doing that, and I ain't going to vote, then we're going to remain in the same position, you know, forever and ever. But I never did quite understand what it was that folks were looking for out of this black president all while he was there talking about, well, he didn't do nothing down there. He didn't do enough or whatever it is. But the important thing right now is anything beats what is in the White House now. Now, Biden may be, you know, maybe not the best guy or what have you, but there's anything, like I said, anything will beat what we have down there. And we have to just hold our nose if necessary and vote for a replacement of Biden for this guy that's in the White House now. That's my feeling. But whatever it takes, you know, whatever it takes.
Yeah, people need to really understand that that what happens is that, you know, the house is on fire, so we can't afford to let the roof burn. So let's put the roof out first, and then we can take care of the other stuff. And like I said, you know, it's great everybody's now, you know, becoming political and understanding. But even these individuals, some of these individuals at the very least, that are now becoming political. They really first got really political during Barack's Obama's election, which was great that we had all of our celebrities come involved, but that was the first inclination. Like I said, it was a more of a celebrity fad, you know, it was the fad of the moment to get on board and you know, vote for the first African American president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the next day is when the work started. You know, and that's what a lot of people don't seem to understand, certainly, about government and things like that, is that when you have a society, someone is responsible for making sure the lights come on. Like I said before in last week's show, there's one job that the president, there's one overall job that the president has. Every president has it, regardless, and it is don't mess stuff up. Our society's gone. We got the buses running all the time. The train's going. We got the planes in the air. People are able to go to work. We got the electricity running. Water's clean. Boom, boom. We got a running society. Your job, Mr. and Ms. President, don't F it up. Yeah. Now, within those parameters that you can institute your ideology and your philosophy and how you administer this or that, and even though it may be so partisan to the left, the main thing you want to do is make sure people can just have their basic way of life. And when that gets interrupted, that's a problem. When you have a guy that is that bad, that, I mean, we're walking around with masks on our face. If you'd have said that 5 years ago to somebody else from another country, we're talking about, I mean, I know you guys have seen clips of people in China with the masks on, and you thought, why do they have that? And what was the thought coming to my mind is like, you know, as you meet somebody from a foreign country or somewhere, like, guys aren't wearing masks. It's like, right. I'm from the United States. That doesn't happen here. You know, if somebody would have told you that, you would have said, that doesn't happen in the U.S. We don't let that happen here. We handle that. Now look at us.
Exactly.
Now look at
and
us.
We had the tools to stop it. There was an opportunity to prevent it.
So, you know, we can't even hug you. You can't even bury your dead. I can't hug my dad. We can't do none of that. And so the Democrats, because that's the team I'm on, I'm going to keep pounding until we start really kind of, like I always say, you guys, manning up a little bit more. Because these guys are too easy. I mean, the stuff they're committing, this is movie stuff. This is the kind of stuff you see in the movie. You know, the villain that's so obvious, it's so crazy, that's running the thing into the ground, that is so obvious that this is the villain. We must stop them. You know, and the fact that is such an easy pitch to make, to get people out to vote. It's such an easy pitch. You know, unfortunately, 100,000 people had to die for, hopefully, the rest of the population of the country to come out. You know, 130 million people voted the last election. There's 300 million people in the country. So that means damn near half the country chose to sit out the election. What else do we need to do to get you? Maybe 100,000 people can get maybe another 10 million to come out and vote and get this bastard out of office. You know,
well, he's
this
already
is the thing,
succeeded
and it's
in killing 100,000 of us, so I hope there's still
that, that's
some
that's what
left.
I said. It's just so easy. This should be a slam dunk for our party, for the Democrats. And we need to stop being Democratic light and try to appeal to some of those maybe Republicans, and that's, you know, there's that white supremacy rearing its head again, for my money. You know, because you have people within the Democratic parties, too, that live within the parameters of that, even though they might not actively be attempting to perpetuate it. Like I said, we live in the white supremacist system, so we're all parts of that system. So people live within the parameters of that system, and you might have those white individuals who don't even realize it, like the one who was never told that, hey, you probably shouldn't say that around other black people, you know. So that, you know, certain members think that certain things are okay just because that's the way it's always been. And they're going to have to get their minds wrapped around it's a new day now. Just like people asking Joe and dudes of that generation, it's like, yo, you can't just be putting your arm around women and all that. It's a new day now. It's not the 70s and 60s no more. I mean, you guys are from a generation where women were kind of second-class citizens. And now we're a generation now. That ain't cool no more, Uncle Joe. You're creeping us out sometimes when you invade people's personal space a little bit, you know? And even though,
yeah.
I mean, it's a wonder, you know, if there was something going to be said about this guy, about being a harasser or something like that, it would have been said a long time ago because he's way too touchy-feely for someone not to have taken it the wrong way or even worse. I know there's some other people who said it over the years, but it seems like to me that there would be a whole lot more instances of people coming out.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That he went too far. So, you know, unlike the other guys, you know, the other individuals that were accused of it, one who was on our team, but he did have a track record of being that dude, not necessarily, you know, aggressive like our current individual who just talk about grabbing people regardless, which is a whole
different
category.
You talking about Franken or?
I was talking about Clinton first. And then about Trump now. You know, Clinton allegedly to be that dude, but he wasn't alleged to be like Donald Trump was talking about just grabbing people. That's assault right there. Bill Clinton might have been accused of being a womanizer from time to time, but there's not assault. So there's, you know, and these are the things I'm talking about. That the party, whatever we do, we just need to be stronger about our message and not be held back and not try to be too middle of the road sometimes when we're trying to appeal to certain people. So, you know, and I think a lot of young black people of Charlemagne's age don't relate to an older white dude like Joe Biden unless he's come. I mean, Bernie at least went in there, part of the, and we've got about another 5 minutes, but part of the, I think, the kind of lack of warmth, I didn't see the interview, but I just know that they had invited Joe Biden to come before, and some of the other candidates have not come, and Joe, this was the first time he did an interview with them, so there might have been that little level of coolness between the two of them. I didn't watch the whole interview, but I can imagine, I know that they mentioned it on the Breakfast Club, that they put out, you know, invitation, and he hadn't accepted, so that might have created a little bit of animosity as well. And if they were jawing back and forth, talking a little trash, you know how we, you know how dudes get. We talk trash to each other. You know,
you didn't see the program? No, you didn't see it. No.
I just saw the exchange. And to me, you know, he was trying to get off the air because his wife was about to do an interview, and they're confined in this basement area. But I didn't think what he said was so outrageous when you juxtapose that with the rest of the interview. But, of course, you know, media wanted to find something to twist this around, and Charlemagne went for the gusto, you know, unfortunately. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, the brother's doing great things in one area, but we cannot afford to mess this up. Can I get caught up in the weeds?
I think that when Biden said that, Charlemagne didn't react in a terribly negative way. I mean, he almost kind of stood past that. He didn't really pick up on it and say anything about it, you know. So he's talking about the other things that were involved and interested. I thought that he could have gone off into a deep, you know, thing, you know, but he didn't do it. So I think
that's the kind of tempo, that's the kind of trash they talk on. Sometimes they talk a little trash on that show. So Joe saying it, you know, it kind of could have been like that, and it could have come back. I mean, had it been, I think, had it also been in the studio, and you could see how someone's coming across a little bit, there could be that energy. But, of course, it's going to be something that's picked up on. And we know Charlemagne sometimes, you know, I just know my personal feeling. I watched the show. I find it informative from that perspective. But I know that sometimes he's apt to go a little left on people that didn't really appreciate it, let's just put it like that, and people had a problem with some of his points of view from time to time over the course of his career.
One of the things I'd say, and I'm going to get off, I guess you're going to get off now anyway, but is there what we can do? You know, the only way that people get elected is they got to be registered to vote. And people who have a voice for the young people, Charlemagne, whomever else, the bottom line is, we can't do anything about anything in the candidates if we're not registered to vote. And unfortunately, at this time, there's not enough of us who are registered to vote, and young people in particular, you know. And so we've got to get those who have influence there, they've got to get them registered to vote, and then we'll bring about the change that we need. But without that vote, we can forget about it, and there's nothing that could be as bad as this person, this Trump guy that's down there now, you know. So and that's where we have to do our emphasis and let it on.
Yeah, thank you, Dad, and you know, I think that people would really be inspired, you know, by someone who's seen as much as you have seen and been a part of the movement in certain aspects and taken a part, and they would really get inspired if you'd go ahead and write that book. I'm putting my father on the spot, everybody, so every time we get him on the show, we could talk to him about writing the book that he should have written to give an eyewitness to all of the stuff he has witnessed over the civil rights years, and we've been talking to him for years, so every time he comes on the show, we're going to ask him when's the book coming out. All right, Dad. I'll talk to you a little bit later.
Coming along. All right.
All right. Talk to you later.
Take care, guys.
All right.
Okay. Good night.
Love you. Bye.
Good talking to you.
All right. This has been K's, formerly K Thompson Live, K's Son and Friends. I'm the son, legendary newsman Wayne Gilman. Tell the peoples your peace and your sign off, what you want them to do.
Well, keep hope alive and keep the faith, baby, as the late, great Adam Powell would say. We cannot afford to just sidestep now, man. We just got to stay on point and see this thing through November.
That's right. There it is from Wayne Gilman. Learn how to sling that power like Adam Clayton Powell. Brother Byron Saunders, what do you want to say to the peoples? Brother Byron, still have you. Is you there? Hello.
Yes, I'm right here.
Brother
Byron. I'm right here.
All right. Go ahead, real quick.
I just want to remind everybody historically, 1921, Black Wall Street, right after the Spanish flu pandemic, happened. Pay attention. We are down that road again. We cannot let history repeat itself. Use your power.
There it is.
Vote.
Brother Byron Saunders. See you again next week. Talk to you next week, Brother Byron. That's right. Get the power. Get the vote. We need to get the power like Adam Clayton Powell, slinging the power, making sure they know who they're messing with. I'm Citizen Payne. This has been K's Son and Friends. We were live tonight, but you can catch us anytime because we're archived. And maybe we'll be live again next week. Probably usually Wednesday, but you never know. We'd like to keep moving, sticking a move like the champ Muhammad Ali did. I'm out. I'm